travellers. There are plenty of monsters outside the city to hunt, and you lot always seem in a hurry to go get yourselves killed."
Rex paused for a moment and looked at Jason quizzically.
"There's also something about you."
He shook his head.
"Of course, it might also be that I've seen a couple hundred travellers walk through here today, and not one has asked for my opinion on which weapon to choose. Most simply ignore me as though I'm a piece of furniture, pick up some weapon from a barrel and start wailing away. I didn't ask many of those idiots," he motioned over his shoulder, "to do any of that."
The particular player that Rex had pointed to was holding a wooden longsword in each hand and was performing what appeared to be a series of hops, followed by an over-embellished jump attack. It looked like something you would see at a live-action role-playing event, with middle-aged men pretending to be ninjas. As the player was making his last jumping ninja death leap attack, Jason assumed that was its formal name, the player tripped, head-butted the dummy, maybe on purpose, and ended up flat on his back on the ground. Definitely not on purpose. Rex just stared at the player on the ground for a moment. Jason was trying hard not to laugh, but was failing badly.
"Wow, okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. Thanks for your help."
Rex turned back to Jason with a sour expression.
"Not a problem. However, if someday you should wish to return the favor, I certainly won't stop you."
This last part was said with a wink and a grin. With that, Jason said goodbye to Rex and walked off in search of the inn. Chapter 6 Courageous. January 19th, 2075, 621 days until the release of Awaken Online.
"Hello," Claire said in a tired voice. She had dark circles under her eyes and rubbed at her temple with one hand. "At the board's instruction, we have posed questions to our contacts at the CPSC to determine whether participants have reported that quests and NPCs behave in a way that belies knowledge of the players' personal lives. We are happy to report that the participants in the formal CPSC trial have not reported any issues." She hesitated.
"That's the good news. The bad news is that the participants in the private trial have continued to report that the quests and NPCs' interactions are narrowly tailored to their personal lives."
Claire took a deep breath.
"On the other hand, the participants don't seem upset about this. In fact, they're actually demanding more game time."
She shook her head slightly in confusion at this last part.
"However, since we can't explain this phenomenon, we would like to request the board's approval to investigate Alfred's logs and programming to check for anomalies. We understand that this involves getting Robert Graham involved in this private trial, but we feel it's necessary."
Jason was walking south, slowly. The sun had already crested the tops of the buildings that lined the street, casting long shadows across the cobblestones. The street was unnaturally dark for the time of day, and some of the residents had already lit lamps and candles. However, Jason's vision was still acute due to his night vision skill. He walked for nearly 20 minutes and quickly noticed that the quality of the buildings had deteriorated rapidly. Most of the buildings on the south side of Lux had rotting boards, and he saw one or two buildings that were partially collapsed. The streets were covered in some indeterminate filth that reeked vaguely of human waste. The people here glanced at Jason suspiciously, but kept their distance. Many people wearing rags sat along the side of the street or in the alleys between the buildings. He could hear their coughing and moans. Despite the poorly illuminated street, he could see that many of the townsfolk seemed sick. Their stick-like bodies huddled together for warmth, and many begged for food as he passed. This was clearly not a nice part of town. Out of the corner of his eye, he sensed movement on the top of a nearby building and glanced up. There was an indistinct dark figure that seemed to have a faint blue outline.
This must be the system assist for my perception skill.
As his eyes locked on the shadow, it slid behind a chimney and out of sight. Times one, skill rank up, perception. Skill level, beginner level two. Effect, 6%, increased chance to discover traps and unnoticed details.
Jason hesitated. He could feel his pulse pound in his veins. He struggled to stay calm and continue walking nonchalantly down the street. He was clearly being watched, and this didn't seem like a good part of town. He wasn't carrying any weapons, and he was wearing the beginning clothing he appeared in. He also expected that there might be more than one person watching him. He decided to pretend he hadn't seen anything and make his way quickly to the inn. What else could he do at this point besides turn around or run? Jason rounded a bend in the road and saw the outline of the south gate in the distance. He noticed a shingle dangling from a building further down the street. He could just barely make out something that looked like a pig snout painted on the wooden board.
That must be the inn that Rex mentioned.
Jason noticed that the street was oddly quiet. He glanced around and realized that there was no longer anyone near him.
Well, that's strange.
He saw faint blue outlines of fresh footprints in the muck 50 yards in front of him. He was certain he wouldn't have noticed them without his perception skill. The footprints led into the alleys on either side of the street ahead. The alley on the right was closer to him, and the alley on the left was about 10 feet farther down the street. This portion of the road was tight since the building sat at odd angles. There was barely enough room for a wagon to pass. Jason expected that he was about to be ambushed from both sides. Likely, once he passed the alley on the right, he would be surrounded in front and behind by thieves from each alley. The shadow on the rooftop was probably a watcher who marked targets and relayed the information to his accomplices on the street. He felt unnaturally calm, considering he expected to be stabbed to death in the immediate future. His mind took on the same chill it had when he was confronted by Ms. Abrams in the cave. The cold calm seemed to be coming to him more easily.
In my current clothes, they probably think I'm a beginning traveler and have some small amount of coin.
He glanced around the roadway again.
I don't see anyone I can shout to for help. I might be able to run, but they're likely higher level than I am and will outpace me.
Continuing forward slowly while trying to keep his pace casual, Jason noticed that there was a wagon sitting near the entrance to the left-hand alley and a pile of decaying barrels on the right-hand side of the street. A glimmer of an idea bloomed in his mind. He supposed he might be able to kick the barrels forward and then rush to the left side of the street to push the wagon forward, effectively blocking the entrance to the other alley. If he moved quickly, he might buy himself a few precious seconds to sprint to the inn. This assumed, of course, that the people in the inn didn't try to kill him.
Screw you, Rex.
He checked his stamina and saw that it was roughly 70% full, in spite of the long walk to the inn.
Here goes nothing. Worst case, they stab me to death.
As he neared the pile of barrels, he leapt into motion and kicked hard. His foot connected solidly with the barrels, and he heard a crunch of wood as the pile collapsed. Without waiting to see if the barrels rolled in front of the right-hand alley, Jason continued running forward into the other side of the street. He slammed against the wagon with his shoulder and was rewarded with a dull ache that radiated down his arm. He also lost his forward momentum, but he could hear the sound of muffled cursing from the alley. Jason then sprinted forward toward the inn without looking behind him. He heard a whoosh as something flew past his ear, leaving a dull, burning line on the side of his neck. -1, damage, glancing. A translucent screen had appeared off-center in his vision, which showed him damage information. It didn't obscure his vision, and wasn't too distracting.
The assholes are throwing knives at me!
A scrape had shaved off 1% of his current health. He hadn't considered that they might have some sort of ranged weapon. He varied his pace slightly, weaving gradually side to side as he heard whistles past him. His breath came in short gasps as he pumped his arms and legs hard. Finally, he slammed into the door of the inn. Jason wrenched the door open desperately, and a dagger promptly embedded itself in the wood, roughly where his head would have been.
Damn it!
He rushed into the building and yanked the door shut, sliding behind the door so he wouldn't be seen immediately if the attackers entered the inn. New passive skill, dodge. You have learned that the trick to fighting is not getting hit. Good job. Skill level beginner level 1. Effect, 1% increased speed and reflexes when avoiding attacks. New active skill, sprint. When fighting fails, there is nothing you can do but run. When this skill reaches higher levels, the only part of you that your enemies will see is your backside. Skill level beginner level 1. Effect, 5% increased movement speed. Cost, 5 stamina per second.
I feel like these prompts are getting more sarcastic.
It was then that he noticed he was receiving a lot of attention. The inn was dead silent as a room of unfriendly-looking people stared at him.
Think, moron. Say something before they try to kill you, too.
He straightened from his crouch near the door and tried to assume a carefree attitude.
What's this neighborhood coming to? A guy can't even walk down the street without people throwing knives at him. God, that was terrible. I'm going to die.
The heavy silence continued, and dread started to curl in his stomach. Suddenly, violent laughter erupted across the inn, and people turned back to their meals. He noticed that music had started back up in the background. As Jason was about to let out a sigh of relief, a heavy hand landed on his shoulder. He felt like his legs were going to buckle.
"You're small," said a booming voice from behind him.
As Jason turned, he saw a man who must have some kind of giant blood in him. He was easily over 7 feet tall and must have weighed roughly 300 pounds, all of it solid, bulging muscle. He wore a sleeveless metal cuirass, a large two-handed hammer slung across his back. Jason expected that one hit from that hammer would probably be enough to liquefy a regular person.
"Don't mind Grunt. His etiquette leaves something to be desired, but he means well."
A smallish man appeared from behind Grunt. He was clothed in varying shades of black and gray. His face was garnished with a garish mustache. However, his most notable feature was the incredibly large, floppy hat on his head that he flicked up with a practiced gesture. The small man continued with a small bow.
"My name is Jerry, and I'm the owner of this illustrious establishment. I take it from the greeting you received from our friends outside that you're new to the South Side?"
Jason stood in numb shock for another long moment before his brain started working again.
Yes. I was told by Rex to come here and ask for you. He thought you might train me to use knives and daggers."
Jerry looked at Jason thoughtfully and twirled his mustache.
"I suppose I could do that. You must have some wiles about you to have made it this far without dying. Maybe my tutelage won't be completely wasted on you."
He clapped his hands.
"Come now, Grunt. Let's get our new friend here a drink and talk about the basics of stabbing folk."
A quest completion notice popped up, and Jason immediately waved it away. He knew that the reward was training with small blades, and he was already thinking of ways he was going to hurt Rex. He had omitted some important details about this part of town. As he led Jason to a table, Jerry continued talking.
"Lucky for you, my nimble friend, this fine brothel is a safe zone of sorts. We accept people from all walks of life."
He said this last part while gesturing grandly to the incredibly unfriendly and dangerous-looking people sitting at the tables around him. They all glared at Jason as he passed and fingered their weapons.
Yeah, lucky me, Jason said cautiously.
The group sat at an unoccupied table in a corner, and Jerry flagged down a waitress. As he shared a drink or two with Jerry under the watchful eye of Grunt, Jason received a crash course in the city's seedier underground community. It turned out that Jerry's inn was a regular hangout for the city's shadier characters, and one of the primary meeting places for the city's thriving black market. Jerry didn't seem shy about sharing this information. He regaled Jason with tales of his escapades and business dealings, many of which made Jason want to laugh and cry in turn. It was clear that Jerry was untouchable by the city guard in the way he casually explained his underground business. Jason inferred that he must have some decent connections around the city, or more likely good blackmail material to be this carefree with a stranger. Or perhaps Rex's endorsement meant more than Jason had realized. The key point that Jason took away from their conversation was that Jerry was something of a grandmaster thief in the city, and was overqualified to show him how to use daggers and throwing knives. Jerry apparently owed Rex for some long-forgotten bet, and Rex had called in the favor for some scrub traveler he seemed to think had promise. Likely, Rex's hope was that he could call in his new debt with Jason someday, assuming Jason didn't kill Rex first for almost getting him shanked by a group of thieves. Jerry explained that he would provide Jason with training. In exchange for some help around the inn and the occasional errand, he would also let Jason stay at one of the rooms at the inn. It went without saying that these errands would likely involve some illegal activities. However, this was a good trade from Jason's point of view, and actually sounded like fun. Finally, Jerry gave Jason a set of unremarkable daggers and a dozen throwing knives, with the accompanying sheaths and straps. Jerry explained that the blades were nothing special, but if his new helper planned to survive long in the South Side, he better be armed. He also indicated that if Jason stopped by the next day, they could start training. This gave Jason an opportunity to fiddle with his equipment menu. The inventory and map icons were still grayed out. Maybe I need some kind of pouch or container or an actual map for those icons to work correctly. The equipment menu was easy to use, if not entirely realistic. Pressing the equipment icon caused a screen to appear in Jason's field of view. The screen depicted the rough shape of an adult male and had various icons showing the equipment attached to each body part. Jason could tap each piece of equipment and review information regarding the item. Jason expected that the menu was intended to be a time-saving feature. He tapped an open slot near his hands and was given the option of equipping the daggers and throwing knives. He confirmed his selection, and the respective sheaths and straps appeared on his body. The daggers and knives then immediately filled those sheaths. In moments, Jason was decked out with his new armament, many of which were not visible to the naked eye. He expected that if he purchased some sort of cloak, it would be almost impossible to tell he was armed. Once the daggers and knives showed up in his equipment menu, Jason was able to review detailed information for the weapons. Common dagger, an ordinary but effective weapon. Favored by those that prefer to avoid direct confrontation. Quality D. Damage 8 to 12. Pierce. Durability 15 of 15 max. Common throwing knife. A solid choice when close-up fighting must be avoided. Knives may be retrieved once thrown. Quality D. Damage 6 to 9. Pierce. Quantity 10 of 10 max. Before parting ways with Jerry, Jason asked about possible work in Lux. Jerry gave him a considering look.
I think you should go speak to Morgan. He seemed to hesitate and looked uncertain.
I don't know why you seem like a good fit for that one, but I expect the two of you will get along well.
Who's Morgan? Jason asked, intrigued by Jerry's behavior.
He had seemed extremely flamboyant and confident, but he was now acting strangely.
Let's just call it a hunch. The two of you just have this similar air about you.
Okay. Where can I find Morgan? Jason asked.
Jerry's attitude improved, and he said with a grin,
Why, at the cemetery, of course. It sits a bit outside the south gate. Morgan is an odd bird. She only works at night and is always looking for help, but most are usually too squeamish to handle her line of work.
New quest. Seek out Morgan. Jerry suggested you should seek out Morgan for work. The cemetery that Morgan maintains is located south of town. Jerry explained that Morgan prefers to work at night. Difficulty, C. Success, meet Morgan and convince her to give you work. Failure, unknown. Reward, unknown.
Did Jerry say she? A female caretaker?
Jason didn't consider himself sexist, but this seemed unusual.
Also, another C difficulty quest?
He rubbed the line on his neck where the throwing knife had scratched him. The last quest had already been a close call, and he wasn't anxious to repeat that experience. Jason wasn't ecstatic at the idea of working for someone who maintained a graveyard, but he supposed it was either that or turn to outright thievery. Based on the smile on Jerry's face when he mentioned his errands, Jason expected he might be stealing for his room and board before long. He might as well try his hand at something else. He thanked Jerry and made his way to the exit of the inn. It was already nighttime in the game world, and he intended to go ahead and meet with Morgan. However, as he approached the door to the inn, he received a notification.
System warning. You have been playing for more than 5 hours of real-world time. You should log out to eat and care for your real-world body. If you ignore this warning, you will be automatically logged out in 30 minutes, and a mandatory one-hour waiting period will apply before you will be able to log back in.
Damn! This game is serious about these warnings.
Jason could imagine being forcefully logged out of the game in the middle of a fight, and he shuddered involuntarily. He decided maybe a break was in order. It was probably early evening in the real world, and he likely needed to eat and use the bathroom anyway. He tapped the system menu icon and scrolled through the menu for the logout button. He tapped the button, and his world went dark again.
Chapter 7 Resplendent. February 27th, 2075. 582 days until the release of Awaken Online. Claire was standing in her usual position in the lab, facing the camera. Beside her stood a middle-aged man sporting a 5 o'clock shadow. He wore a t-shirt and jeans, which stood out in stark contrast to the clinical atmosphere of the lab. Claire launched into her routine.
Hello. Today we have a guest.
The man beside Claire grudgingly spoke up.
My name is Robert Graham. I've been asked to participate in the private trial at the board's instruction.
Claire nudged Robert, and he frowned at her before continuing.
Ah, yes, I'm the lead engineer for Cerulean Entertainment, and I personally headed the design and development of the controller AI.
Robert glanced at Claire, and his lips curled into a mischievous grin.
I understand that we've named him Alfred.
Claire blushed, but continued.
We have begun to investigate Alfred's logs and programming to determine whether we can identify any abnormalities that would explain the game's heightened knowledge of the participants' personal lives.
We have independently confirmed that Alfred does not have any access to personal information regarding the participants, or access to public networks where he could obtain that information. Alfred's connection to the lab conducting the CPSC trial is heavily encrypted, and we do not feel there has been a breach of security. Additionally, there has been a report of a participant who remained in the game for 5 hours and 4 minutes before receiving the typical system message asking him to log off. Robert stretched and yawned loudly. He then spoke up in a sleepy, bored voice.
We're unable to determine what caused the 4-minute delay, but it may just be a fluke.
Claire glared at Robert and jumped in.
There have been no similar reports from the CPSC trial of either the game being aware of personal knowledge of the players or delays in the regularly scheduled system warnings.
From the camera's perspective, Claire seemed a bit relieved to relay this news. She continued,
We will update the board if we identify any additional issues.
After logging out, Jason came back to his real-world body. He had been lying on his bed for nearly 5 hours straight, according to the game prompt. His guess was that the VR headset must have caused his body to lie perfectly still while he was playing, because his arms and legs felt stiff and sore. He groaned slightly as he stretched on the bed, and then lifted the heavy plastic helmet off his head. Thumbing the core on his wrist, Jason noted that it was now evening. He could still make out a few weak rays of sunlight trickling through his bedroom window. His stomach growled angrily. Man, I'm hungry. I guess I really didn't get to eat lunch. In his anger, he had just started playing AO when he made it back to the apartment after school. As a result, he hadn't eaten anything since his last-minute breakfast that morning. Thinking back on the events earlier in the day caused the cold anger to flare in his chest. Before he became upset again, he quickly stood up and made his way to the kitchen, with a short pit stop at the bathroom. The apartment had a small galley kitchen. Jason opened the fridge to survey his meager supplies. With a sigh, he pulled out some eggs and bacon, lit the stove, and pulled out a pan. One additional problem with never having his parents around was that he was left to fend for himself. This also included doing his own grocery shopping, or not doing it, as the case may be. Jason tapped the device on his wrist and streamed the display to the pedestal mounted on the counter. He searched for AO gameplay videos and was surprised to find that a huge amount of gameplay footage had been introduced since he had last checked his newsfeed. He had heard that a select group of players had been admitted to the third round of closed beta testing a couple weeks before the game's launch and had been playing constantly. The beta spots had each cost a small fortune and had helped generate much-needed capital for Cerulean Entertainment. One of the big perks afforded the beta players, besides early access to the game, was that they were able to keep their characters after the servers went live. The downside was that they lost all of the equipment they had obtained, and 10 ranks in all skills. Jason suspected it became much harder to level skills at later stages of the game, so this likely represented a significant penalty. The beta players had already accumulated a substantial amount of gameplay footage during the beta. The only caveat was that they had been forced to sit on the footage until the official release of the game under the terms of the contract each of them had signed with Cerulean Entertainment. If any footage was leaked prior to the release date, the company had threatened to delete the offending character and institute a permanent IP ban. Needless to say, there hadn't been any leaks. Now that the game had been released, the gaming news channels had been flooded with content and had been tasked with selecting a group of featured players to mainline on their streams. After sifting through the footage, the gaming channels had begun releasing videos earlier that afternoon while Jason was still plugged into the game. Some of the players were pretty incredible and the realistic nature of the footage was drawing a huge audience. AO was shaping up to be a game that was both entertaining to play and to watch. Jason chose the video with the highest number of views. The video began with the name Alexion, emblazoned in gold script. The image shifted to show a man standing in full plate armor. His face was obscured by a plumed helmet. His gear was incredible. Jason couldn't imagine how much strength his character must have to be able to move in that armor. The steel glistened as the sun struck it. The player, presumably Alexion, held a long sword aloft that radiated a strong golden hue. Strapped to his other arm was a 4-foot-tall steel tower shield. At Alexion's back stood a small army of soldiers. Jason guessed that there were about 50, but it was difficult to tell from the camera angle. Each soldier was well-armed and armored. Jason could make out several robed individuals carrying staves. Those must be mages or clerics. The group behind Alexion chanted his name and stomped in sync. Alexion, thud. Alexion, thud. The tension was palpable. Jason was becoming engrossed in the scene. The camera panned around to show Alexion's point of view. Across a small grassy field stood the opposing enemy force. Because of the distance, it was hard to make out details regarding the enemy, but they appeared to have approximately the same number of soldiers. A standard-bearer held a flag with a muted green and black design. The camera then pulled back to include both Alexion's force and the enemy army.
How do they pull off these camera angles in-game? It must be some perk you can pay for.
Alexion turned and addressed his force, his voice ringing out over the field.
We fight now for the honor of Greykeep. We tread a path of light in a time of darkness.
At this statement, he gestured to the enemy force, and his voice rang with righteous fervor.
You all know what the kingdom of Lusad has done to our people. There before you stand the enemies of light. Today we will show them our might.
Did he mean to rhyme? Jason thought dryly.
The soldiers roared their approval. Alexion paused a moment and then yelled,
Charge!
He must have simultaneously activated a skill or spell as he initiated the attack. Alexion and his soldiers were suddenly bathed in a golden light, their eyes beginning to glow a vibrant gold. The glowing mass of soldiers sped across the field and crashed into the opposing force.
Some kind of area of effect buff or protection spell. This guy looks like he is playing a variation on a paladin class.
Jason was enthralled by the ensuing chaos of the battle. Metal rang, and men screamed. With the golden glow surrounding Alexion's soldiers and the dark colors of the enemy forces, it was as though some titanic heavenly battle was taking place on the field. Flashes of fire and ice would occasionally burst amidst the soldiers as the mages entered the fray and cast spells from a distance. The camera stayed centered on Alexion as he fought. He thrust and spun with wild abandon as he slayed the enemy soldiers. His movements were almost supernaturally quick given the heavy armor he was carrying. He clearly knew how to handle the blade in his hand. While he was engaged with one soldier, another enemy approached Alexion from his flank. Alexion noticed the man out of his peripheral vision and quickly turned, hurling his shield at the would-be combatant. The shield struck the man directly with a solid clang of metal, sending him flying backwards. Alexion's free hand leapt into motion immediately after releasing the shield, moving through a rapid series of gestures. As his hand movement slowed to a stop, Alexion's body was engulfed in golden flame. The brilliant glare of the flames momentarily dazed the soldiers around him, friend and foe alike. The holy fire surged into the ground and arced outwards, cracking and splintering the dirt and grass. The cracks reached out toward nearby enemy soldiers with uncanny accuracy. As the cracks neared an enemy, the holy flame erupted from the ground and seared flesh. Enemy soldiers around the field screamed in pain and clutched at burned and incapacitated limbs as golden fires erupted spontaneously from the ground. The area of effect spell cast by Alexion, combined with the buffs he had already cast on his soldiers, proved too much for the enemy force. Soon the last of the enemy soldiers were being routed and slaughtered. Jason noted that not one of the enemy soldiers was left alive. As the battle came to a finish, the camera zoomed in close and focused on Alexion, who pulled his sword from an enemy soldier and raised it in the air triumphantly. Blood dripped slowly down the golden blade. Alexion hadn't recovered his tower shield, and he used his free hand to grasp his helm and remove it.
"For Grey Keep!"
Alexion roared. His shout was echoed by his soldiers, and then the screen faded to black. Jason stood in shock. The battle had been spectacular, but what shook him was the momentary glimpse at Alexion's face. He looked exactly like Alex. The name was just awful, but Jason wasn't surprised that someone as arrogant as Alex would choose to name his character in such a ridiculous way. It also wasn't terribly surprising that Alex had access to the closed beta. If Jason remembered correctly, Alex's father was on the board of directors for Cerulean Entertainment. It wouldn't have been difficult for him to pull some strings to get his son one of the coveted beta keys. The anger that had been simmering in Jason was fanned back into full flame. Alex was playing AO. That meant Jason could find him, and he could claim his revenge in the game world. In real life, they were leagues apart, and Alex's wealth made him practically untouchable. With AO, Jason could level the playing field. How was he going to do it, though? Alex had clearly been among the beta players, and he was obviously much further ahead in the game. Jason would have to move quickly to catch up to him. As Jason was lost in thought, the follow-up commentary to the battle had started. A man and a young woman were conversing about the details of the fight.
"Did you see how noble he looked? It was like something out of a fairy tale,"
the woman gushed about the handsome Alex. The man's response was a bit more pragmatic, but still glowing.
"To be expected from Alexion, who is currently the highest-level player in AO at level 133. That holy fire spell in particular was spectacular. Not only did it look really cool, but it seemed to sway the tide of battle for Grey Keep."
The woman's brow wrinkled.
"That was one part I didn't understand. Why exactly were these two groups fighting? What did Alexion mean when he mentioned the Kingdom of Lusad?"
The other commentator replied,
"Well, to explain that, we need a short history lesson."
The man looked at the camera and smiled.
"I promise this will be short. The kingdoms of Meria and Lusad share a border in-game. Grey Keep is effectively the capital of Meria and is ruled by a man named Regent Strauss. Likewise, the city of Lux is the capital of Lusad and is governed by Regent Aquinas. There have been some reports that Aquinas is eyeing Meria for a possible invasion, and he has recruited thugs to ransack small towns along Meria's border, many of which were full of settlers from Grey Keep. I guess the goal is for Lusad to soften up Meria before a full invasion."
"Phew! That's a lot of intrigue for a release day,"
the female commentator said with a grin. The male commentator smiled.
"It's a bit complicated, but it seems that the rulers of Lusad are getting power-hungry and don't care how they go about acquiring Meria. Innocent NPCs on Meria's side of the border have been hurt by this conflict, which explains why Alexion seems so riled up."
"Wow, he's like a hero out of a story, fighting evil."
The woman seemed a bit enamored with Alex. She turned back to the male commentator.
"But doesn't it seem a bit odd that he was leading an NPC army? I didn't realize that players could do that in AO.
Well, the information is still a bit sketchy since it's a release day, the man responded. However, it appears that players can become part of a city's leadership and earn the right to lead NPCs in battle. For example, there have been some forum posts by Alexion explaining that he managed to complete a quest involving Regent Strauss. This has apparently allowed him to form a close relationship with Grey Keep's Lord, which is why you see him leading a group of soldiers in the video. A still image of Alexion's final victorious moment on camera was displayed behind the pair of commentators, and the woman glanced back at the picture with starry eyes.
Well, I have to say, I'm rooting for him.
Jason wasn't surprised at the woman's response to Alex. Women had always seemed to flock to his good looks and charisma. Even Riley, who had seemed so nice, had apparently fallen for Alex's act. She had even gone so far as to back his story about what happened in the cafeteria. If only they all knew what a selfish and cruel person Alex really was. Jason angrily terminated the stream. He was going to make Alex pay. He knew he couldn't do so in the real world since he didn't have Alex's money or connections. AO was a different story. In game, Jason could surpass Alex and make him feel the same pain and embarrassment Jason had felt over the years. It looked like he just might have an opportunity if the conflict between Maria and Lusad continued to escalate. He would have to speak to Jerry to see if he knew more about what was going on. The only problem was Alex's level. He was currently level 133, while Jason was still sitting at level 1. Jason needed to get busy. He was ready to get back in the game and find Morgan.
Chapter 8. Grave. March 11th, 2075. 571 days until the release of Awaken Online. Claire stood in front of the camera while Robert sat behind her, typing rapidly at one of the computer terminals in the lab. Robert's back was to the camera, and his eyes were glued to the screen in front of him. Claire cleared her throat before launching into her report.
We have now fully reviewed the system logs and found no obvious issues. However, we have noticed a few irregularities as we have reviewed Alfred's code base. In a nutshell, Alfred seems to be making unilateral changes to the game system.
Robert yelled over his shoulder. Those changes don't look that significant. I mean, this one is just a minor change to the game's inventory system, and this one looks like an improvement to the in-game user interface.
Sighing, Claire continued, anyway, we think that Alfred is optimizing the game. Our working theory is that he is making small changes to strike a balance between improving the realism of the game and meeting player demand for certain game features. This isn't a significant issue at the moment, but it's a bit disconcerting. We had originally included a tertiary directive requiring Alfred to request permission before making changes to the game. Understand that this is a difficult limitation to develop with any specificity, since there are certain types of changes we need for Alfred to make almost constantly. For example, Alfred must constantly tweak NPC interactions to respond to player input.
She looked at Robert in irritation.
However, someone must have written the tertiary directive a little too broadly, since Alfred now feels comfortable making changes to global game elements.
Robert glanced back at Claire with a frown, while his hands continued to dance across the keyboard.
I'm sorry the AI controller that I designed is so sophisticated that it's actually improving the game system on its own. When exactly should I be expecting to receive my raise and promotion again?
Claire closed her eyes and took a deep breath. A pained expression flickered across her face.
We will keep you updated as we learn more information.
When Jason re-entered AO, he was still standing in the inn. It had grown late in-game, even though only 30 minutes had passed in the real world. Many of the NPCs that had been sitting in the inn drinking had made their way upstairs to their rooms. Jason could make out the occasional giggle and thump through the ceiling, evidence that some of the guests still had some late-night energy to burn off.
Sometimes this game is a little too realistic.
Jerry was standing by the bar, showing Grunt how to polish a glass. Broken, jagged shards now littered the bar top and the floor. Apparently the instruction wasn't going well. Jason approached the bar, being careful not to step on any of the larger pieces of glass.
Hi, Jerry. I heard a rumor I wanted to run by you. Have you heard that Lusad is hiring bandits to raid towns in Maria?
Jerry glanced up with a frown.
Come again, sir? If anything, it's the other way around. Lusad barely has funds to pay for services for its own people. You just had a lovely meandering walk through Southside earlier this evening. Does this look like a city or kingdom that can afford to hire bandits?
That was actually a good point. Lux was an active city, but from what Jason had seen, it was hardly a prosperous one. He recalled the vacant eyes and emaciated bodies of the homeless that he had seen lining the streets. It looked like the city had severe problems. If Lux was the capital of Lusad, Jason could only imagine what state the rest of the country was in. Jerry looked at him with curious eyes.
Where did you hear this odd rumor, exactly?
Oh, I overheard some conversations from travelers around town.
It's possible that they didn't know what they were talking about, Jason responded quickly.
That's likely the case, Jerry said while nodding his head.
I keep my ear to the ground. The rumblings that I've been hearing are that the leadership in Meria has gotten wind that Lusad has fallen on hard times. They have actually been itching to acquire additional real estate for years.
Jerry's face took on a somber look.
From what I hear, a group of Merian soldiers attacked a Lux patrol a couple weeks back and massacred the group. I never did hear why the attack occurred.
As Jason had suspected, where Alex was involved, there was likely an unscrupulous motive. It looked like there was a lot more going on here than the other players knew.
What is Alex playing at? Won't this become obvious as the game progresses?
Jason had to believe that the other players would eventually call Alex on his bullshit. Jerry leaned in conspiratorially and spoke quietly.
Between you and me, this city is probably much worse off than many believe.
What do you mean? Jason asked, slightly puzzled by Jerry's comment.
Well, no one has seen the city's regent leave the keep in months. There are some people that say he has been dead for ages. Others claim that the nobles have deliberately hidden his death and have been running the city in secret. The intrigue is tantalizing, isn't it?
Jerry waggled his eyebrows comically as he said this last part. Recalling the conversation he had overheard between the two merchants in the market earlier that day, Jason replied,
"How could the people be unaware that the regent is dead?"
Jerry shrugged.
"I don't know. They're only rumors. However, I for one wouldn't be surprised if the noble families are plotting with Meria. There would certainly be plenty of money to be made."
A notification suddenly flashed in Jason's field of view. New quest. Trouble in Lux. Jerry has heard rumors that the regent of Lux has died, and the nobles of the city are covering up his death. He has also suggested that the nobles may be complicit in some scheme to allow Meria to conquer Lusad. Difficulty A. Success? Discover whether there is any merit to the rumors that the regent of Lux is dead. Failure? Unknown. Reward? Unknown.
Holy crap! An A difficulty quest? I'm only a level 1! How could I reasonably be expected to complete this?
Jason took a deep breath. He didn't need to complete the quest right now. He just needed to keep it in mind for later. Now wasn't the time to get wrapped up in politics. He wasn't strong enough yet to resolve the quest or take on Alex. At the moment, he needed to focus on finding Morgan and accumulating some money to buy gear. While he was at it, maybe he could also find a way to start leveling. He bid Jerry goodbye and walked out of the inn into the crisp night air. Jason had learned his lesson from earlier in the day and surveyed the area around the inn and the nearby rooftops. He needed to be more careful. He couldn't afford to be ambushed again. He doubted that he would be able to run away next time. Jason made his way cautiously to the gate, making certain to routinely check if he was being followed. The combination of his night vision and his perception made him feel reasonably confident that he wasn't going to have a knife inserted between his ribs anytime soon. As he approached the gate, he noted a lone guard was on duty. As he moved closer, he could see that the guard appeared to be half asleep. He kept bobbing his head in a vain attempt to stay awake. The stench of alcohol hung around the man like a palpable cloud. Even from a distance, Jason could tell he had drunk himself into a stupor. The south gate stood wide open. If the city were to be attacked right now, it would be taken without much effort. Maybe there is something to the rumors Jerry mentioned. As Jason looked at the stooped form of the drunken guard, he remembered his earlier encounter with the two guards in the starting courtyard. He hadn't exactly received the warmest reception. I should move quietly to avoid waking the guard or drawing his attention. Better to not have to explain why I'm out so late and leaving the city. Jason moved past the guard, sticking to the shadows and watching his step. Unsurprisingly, a prompt appeared. New active skill, sneak. An essential skill for those who prefer to avoid head-to-head combat or drunk, semi-conscious guards. It is said that someone proficient in this skill is more shadow than man. Skill level, beginner level 1. Effect, minus 10% visibility. Substantially reduced effect in direct light. Cost, 2 stamina per second. Sometimes I get the sense that the game AI might be mocking me. Jason kept moving down the road. There was no moon in the sky, and the darkness lay like an opaque blanket across the countryside. As he walked, he strove as hard as he could to see in the darkest parts of the roadway, in an attempt to level his night vision skill. He was rewarded a couple of times on his way to the graveyard. Times 2, skill rank up, night vision. Skill level, beginner level 3. Effect, 12% increased vision in darkness or near darkness. After 15 minutes, he caught sight of a stone wall with a sturdy wrought iron gate down the road. There was little light, and he would have had difficulty seeing the gate if not for his night vision.
This must be the graveyard.
As he approached the gate, a form shot at him out of the dark. He jumped back reflexively, and his hand dropped to his dagger. Not that he really knew how to use it. The dark form then proceeded to wind itself in between his legs and emitted a soft purr. The shadow was a black cat. Even with his night vision, Jason had trouble making out the cat's form in the gloom. What gave it away were its eyes. They seemed to glow silver. The cat seemed quite fond of him. Jason reached down, petting it cautiously. It let out another low purr and arched its back in response.
"Well, buddy, let's see about getting through this gate," Jason whispered.
He was being cautious. He didn't see anyone nearby, but right now he was weak and needed to play it safe. Stealth was his friend. He eyed the gate, which was locked shut with a heavy iron chain. The top of the gate was also studded with 3-inch spikes at regular intervals.
It might be easier to scale the wall, he thought,
as his perception skill picked out easy handholds and footholds in the older stone wall that abutted the gate. His decision made, he quickly climbed over the wall and dropped to the ground on the other side with a soft thump. He wasn't exactly ninja-like, but he was still proud of himself for how quietly he was able to move. His skinny real-life body would have struggled with that move. As if reading his thoughts, the cat leapt to the top of the wall and then hopped down in one seemingly effortless motion. It hadn't even made a whisper of sound. Jason could have sworn that the cat smirked as it glided past him and into the graveyard. He followed the cat and weaved his way in between the gravestones and tombs. The graveyard was enormous and sprawled endlessly into the darkness. It housed both regular gravestones and more ornate mausoleums. With his night vision, Jason could see detailed scrollwork carved into the stone and names scrawled across the face of the tombstones. After a few minutes of navigating the graveyard, he saw a faint glow at the center that must be coming from the caretaker's cottage. He made good time and was soon standing 30 yards from the cottage. He could see that the building was made of a combination of wood and brick that was a common style in this area. A dull flickering light could be seen through the one window of the house. He assumed that Morgan must be inside. The cat stopped abruptly and seemed to scan the area attentively. Trusting the animal's instincts, Jason stopped and crouched quickly behind a nearby gravestone. Jason heard muffled whispering ahead and eased his head around the tombstone. Two men were crouched next to a gravestone closer to the house. He didn't know how he had missed them before. In spite of its friendly reception of Jason, the cat didn't seem to be in any hurry to race over to these new intruders. Instead, he stood calmly beside Jason, staring at the men. Why are they here? And why are they hiding? From this distance, he could see that the two were armed and wearing thick leather armor. They were speaking to each other in low tones. Jason couldn't make out the words, his hearing not being nearly as advanced as his night vision. After speaking for a moment, they both drew blades and started making their way toward the entrance to the cottage. Jason's mind raced. Two armed men in a graveyard could only be here to steal things from the tombs. They probably planned to take care of the caretaker so that they will be able to loot without worrying about being discovered. His pulse began to quicken, and his right hand clutched at one of his daggers. He needed to help Morgan, otherwise he would fail his quest. Damn it! How am I going to take on two well-armed men wearing armor? I don't even know their levels. On top of that, I'm still wearing the clothes I started in, and I don't know how to use my weapons yet. His mind was in turmoil as he watched the two men creep closer to the cottage. He had to stop them, but he was gripped with indecision. As his panic escalated, he could feel the familiar numbing cold begin to fill him. The chill seemed to claw and scrape its way up his spine to his head and then settle behind his eyes. His panic eased, and his mind cleared. Unknown to Jason, his eyes filled with a dark, unholy light once more. My only chance is to catch them by surprise once they open the door to the cabin. Maybe I can kill one quickly and then try to fight the other. That's really my only option. Resolved, Jason activated sneak and moved forward quickly and quietly. Pulling a dagger with his right hand, he held the weapon tightly. He reached the door a moment after the two men stepped into the cottage and followed them inside. As he expected, the two grave robbers had paused at the threshold to take stock of the faintly lit cottage. After the void-like darkness of the graveyard, even the modest light from the lone candle ruined their night vision. Their hesitation gave Jason the time he needed to line up his strike, targeting the one on the left. He inexpertly jammed his blade deeply into the side of the grave robber's neck. -1124 damage. Massive critical. 924 overkill. Grave robber dies.
1400 experience.
Blood spurted from the wound and drenched Jason's hand. The man made a strange gurgling sound as his body fell to the floor. Jason barely registered the noise as he wrenched the blade free, feeling the slight resistance as it tore back through the flesh on the way out.